Today's episode is the second part of our Blues in Europe episode. I interview Adamo and Vicky, who many people are aware of in Spain and in the UK, as the premier instructors who run five blues events and the Blues Room, which is an online platform for blues instruction. I'll be brief. They are incredible instructors with a lot of formal education on dance and human anatomy, and in their expertise, really bring forward some important points about what we do when we don't have the resources in a space. Vicky emailed me after this interview and had said, we really create events or organize systems when we see a need that needs to be met and there's not another way to meet it. And I think that's very, very important as a concept for all of us, because many spaces we have fewer resources rather than try to pull people from around the world, building where we're at or creating a system that allows more people to access information, can spread history, culture, and appreciation in ways that are perhaps more efficient than spending thousands and thousands of dollars trying to pull one or two people to bring that information. That said, there's also an importance in this interview of focusing on the music and what we do when we ask bands to play a very limited set of what they can play, the damage that that does to dancers and communities, and what we can do instead. And with all of that said, let's hop right into the interview, and I hope you enjoy it. And if you are interested in any of the platforms or events that are discussed in this podcast, you can check them out. We'll have links in the episode description below. Hi, and thanks for coming on the podcast, Vicky and Adamo. How are you?
Hello. Very good, thank you.
How are you?
You know, doing pretty well this morning. I'm so glad we have you on the podcast to talk about blues in Europe and your online teaching and learning system. So could you just, for our listeners, introduce yourselves, say a little about who you are?
I'll go first? Yeah, I'll go first. So I'm Vicky. I am based in London. So I'm over here in the UK at the moment, and I have been teaching blues dance with Adamo for around 11, 12 years now.
Hi, everyone. I'm Adamo. I'm currently living in Valencia, Spain, although I used to be in London, where Vicky and I met and where we started teaching blues together. We developed a very nice blues community in London, but then I guess it got to a point where we wanted to change lifestyle. We moved to Valencia, and then Vicky decided to move back. But we're still working together, and we absolutely love what we do.
You both found blues somehow. So how did you each encounter blues dancing?
I was in London, and I guess probably my first encounter was with my Lindy Hop teacher. He did a blues Thursday, which I enjoyed, and at the same time there was a different school doing blues parties twice a month, so I started going to those blues parties. And at the time, I guess it was more Lindy Hopping, doing the blues dancing, whatever, we didn't know what we were doing. And I remember my first party, I was blown away because it was Tulane music at this late night Lindy festival in London with Gordon Webster. And I was like, what is this? I absolutely love it. I really remember that night, and I got totally hooked. Yeah, and that was my first encounter to blues.
And then I basically met Adamo, and the rest is history. I had encountered blues again through Lindy Hop. I was at Lindy Hop night, the band played a slow song, I danced with a friend, and he was like, this is blues. I was like, oh, what's that? And then I went along to a social dance that Adamo was running, met him there. Well, I'd actually met him once before, but never spoken to him. So we met there, and then it just kind of snowballed. I fell in love with the dance. Fell in love with Adamo, that helps. And so that was my first encounter, really, in this tiny, tiny pub in Soho in London, where like sweat was dripping off the walls. And Dan Nash, if you know Dan Nash, he was playing live on a chair on top of a pool table because it was that small that they couldn't even fit him in the room. And I was hooked from then on.
That sounds like a classic blues story, like in the bar, right?
Exactly.
It's in the tiny bar, you're wall to wall of people. So what year was that?
Oh gosh.
2011, maybe?
2011.
All right, so over a decade ago at this point, time flies.
Oh, wow, that was
Yeah, that was exactly, Vicky, when you were there, that was Christmas party. So it was December 2011.
You and Adamo, once you got, you know, a feel for it and things up and running, really just got on a roll. It seems like you have run and continue to run successful blues events like Good Time Blues Dance Fest and The Jump and a Spanish Blues Festival. What was your process in organizing those? Like, what, why that many and what makes them unique?
Great question. Why that many?
Why that many?
I should start by saying that, so ESBF, a Spanish blues festival, was actually Alba's idea originally.
That was my idea, Vicky.
Alba and Adamo together were dance partners originally. And Alba had always wanted to throw a festival in her hometown in Madrid. And so when Adamo and Alba were working together, they brought up the idea for a Spanish. And they ran the first year, just the two of them, in Madrid. And at the time, it was the first blues event in Spain. And then it was year two that I got involved, and Gaston, because by that point I was working with Adamo and Alba was working with Gaston. So year two, the four of us combined forces to run that. Do you want to say a little bit more about it, seeing as it was your brainchild?
I guess, yeah, Alba was going to move back to Spain. And I said, why don't we organize an event? Because at the time, Alba and I used to train together, and we did... We were going to blues festivals in Europe and competing, and we trained. So yeah, she was going to move back to Madrid, and I said, let's do a blues event so that, you know, might be a good thing for your community. And it was, because that first year we had 136 people, I still remember. But then, as Vicky said, her and Gaston joined in the second year. And then I think after 5 years, we started the second edition of the Spanish Blues Festival. We called it initially Petit Blues, Petit ESBF. So Spanish was in April and Petit was in December. And original was going to be a local event. But then I guess, you know, people wanted to come, and we decided to at the end, today is two ESBF. One is winter edition, one is April, spring edition. They're not big, they're 160 people because of the size of the venue, but we absolutely love the way it is, both of them. Very, for me, those two events are very simple because it's four organizers. We know what we do. We have a clear vision of the event, and there's no fuss around. There's no, like, very simple, good quality classes, great live music, great venues, and that's it.
Well, and I think that's great to have that vision, because so often I think organizers get really grandiose ideas. We love the idea of having the biggest and the best of everything, and we lose track, and it's not as great of an event as we think it's going to be because we're trying to do too much, whether it's bring out too many bands or too many teachers or host too many classes in event spaces that don't fit the needs. So I think that's really smart. And with the live bands, how many live bands do you bring out? Because I love that you call it a blues festival, which most people associate with music rather than dance.
I guess we call it blues festival because since we started dancing blues, people call it blues festivals. It's generally two bands per night. Sometimes we repeat the bands. We tend to prioritize local musicians, although we have some friends and people we love from the, you know, European scene that sometimes we bring over. But normally it's a couple of concerts per night. And yeah, it's a 3 days event.
I mean, it's in Spain, so the parties go on until 5-6 in the morning.
I guess in America you would call it an exchange, maybe?
Yeah, a lot of times they'll call it an exchange because Blues Festival, like I just went to the Utah Blues Festival last weekend, and they bring out a dozen musicians and they all have their slot over the course of the weekend that they play at least one time. And then they go late at night over to the bar and play until they're done playing, which is, you know, usually early morning hours. But that, not that there's not spaces to dance, but that it prioritizes the music over dancing.
Something that part of the reason for keeping it simple was this prioritizing of the music. It was like, okay, if we can save costs, right? We all know that events cost a lot of money. If we can save costs in other areas and all this kind of fuss that maybe we don't always need at every festival, then we can put more money into just having killer music, which for us is the whole reason that we dance. And then something that we loved that first started happening, I think more in the winter festival, was that the musicians became an integral part of the festival. So they would also teach some lessons. They might teach on their own or they might teach with us. They would be there every night, even if they weren't playing. They would maybe play on the Friday and the Sunday, but they'd come on Saturday. They would play in different formations, so they'd get to know each other. We tend to talk about the musicians as part of the team in the same way we talk about ourselves or the other teachers. Like, we are the team for that festival, rather than separating, like, you're the band and that's it, and you come and you leave. They don't. They come and they stay, and they're part of the weekend.
Like, we prioritize the live music so much that we don't even want to do a teacher demo anymore at time end.
Well, and I think I was just having a conversation with a dancer about this last night, is that if we prioritize the music first, which I think you're right, we should, this should be the central focus. The music inspires the movement. And if the music isn't inspiring dancing, why are we dancing to it? Is that it should be less about, like, how flashy can we make a demo, and more about, like, how can we make sure that we're centering the music and doing what the music calls for, which doesn't necessarily need teachers to highlight. It just needs great dancers to dance and some musicians to interact with that. I mean, that sounds fantastic, because there is a great history of interaction between musicians in Europe and musicians here in the States, and getting a lot of that sound, the blues music, the jazz music, and allowing the history of Europe to put its own flair on that style of music. You know, when you're focusing so much on the music, how do you approach teaching? Because I know you run Bluesology, which is a teacher training camp. You know, if music is the most central part of it, how do you use the music to train that upcoming group of instructors?
That is such a beautiful question.
I have a couple of things. I guess, like, the main difference for me between, like, 8-10 years ago now is that when I was running a blues in London, even before Vicky, and I will have live music, I will tell the musicians what to play and what not to play. And now think about it, it's so ridiculous. And the reason why I was doing that, because I didn't know how to dance to a specific, you know, rhythm or grooves or style of blues music. But then, you know, we got to eventually to a point with Vicky, like, everything we teach comes from the music. So we need to learn how to dance to every song, actually, to every song, and adapt the way we move to the song, so that then we develop classes according to that. So it's not like, oh, let's do some moves and then put some music on. No, let's dance to a song and see how we dance to it. So that's one of the main things for us. Yeah, all our classes are based on the music.
Yeah, because we found there was a point, and I wonder if other sort of newer communities do this, where they ask the band, you know, or make sure the songs aren't more than 3 or 4 minutes, make sure they're within this tempo range. We've probably all heard that, right? And then we started to think, well, the worry with that is we're developing dancers who are so narrow in what they're capable of, because they're never being exposed to anything more. You know, DJs are playing certain songs that are maybe easy to dance to, and then the band are coming on and playing songs that are easy to dance to. Well, where is our challenge? Like, where are we, or our students, going to be stretched and going to start to learn different things? So that's why now we've stopped. We're like, okay, it's up to us to adapt our dancing to fit what the bands are playing, because that's what it should be. We should be able to walk into a blues bar that's got nothing to do with dance and be able to dance to the music we hear if we want to, not only dance to dancers' blues music, you know? So we're really trying to sort of get rid of any difference between a band that's hired for a dance event and a band that's hired for a blues event.
And I think that's really important, because we look at things like bebop that people say, oh, you know, nobody danced to it. But we do, in fact, have record and a whole book that Dr. Christy J. Wells wrote about people who dance to this type of music. Just because it's not what we typically think of as dancing music does not mean that people didn't still go to bars, and people who wanted to dance figured out this is how you dance to this music. And so we have to be willing to not just play that music, but also to respect that there is a way to dance to it. And there's probably some history behind it that we can actually learn. Yeah, just a little bit that we can learn and teach to other instructors, that we can learn and teach to other dancers. And so that when we're going out, we're respecting that music and that history. Given all of that, that sense of like, we have this dream that we want everybody to be able to dance to many styles of music, but you are also based in different spaces in Europe currently, but just have been in places that may not be accessible to everybody, right? You want to teach. Everybody, you know, I think here in the States that dances blues, has been to events, knows who you are and gets excited when you're coming to teach. And I'm sure it's similar here, you know, over in Europe, but there are those restrictions. So is that what inspired the Blues Room, or what inspired the Blues Room?
It's exactly that, actually. So originally it wasn't called the Blues Room. Originally it was just online classes with Adamo and Vicky, a very catchy title. And that was quite a few years ago. I can't even remember when we started.
2017.
Well done, Adamo. That was completely inspired by this feeling of going to lots of very small communities around Europe, some in quite odd places that had no local community or no regular classes. We might fly in, do a weekend workshop, and then it kind of felt like we were abandoning a load of people who had just got really inspired to learn the blues. And they would even say to us on the Sunday, like, oh God, when are you coming back? Why can't you come back? And so the original idea was just to provide some classes to the people that couldn't have it, that didn't have access to it. And there, you know, there are so many cities in Europe, and a lot of them are not in an economic state to be able to travel to events. So it was also a case of, you know, maybe they can't afford to fly people in, or they certainly can't afford to fly out to dance events in other countries. So what can we do that is cheaper and just some small way going to help them, or maybe even help someone who wanted to start to teach in a small community somewhere? Is this a sort of support that we can provide for them? So that was the original idea. And then COVID hit. And then it kind of had to become something else, basically. So obviously overnight, like I think all the other dance teachers in the world, especially dance teachers who are full-time like us, we lost all of our work overnight. We had about a year's worth of work and it was all cancelled. And we just sat down and went, right, well, what are we going to do? We better do a few more videos, was the original idea. And then it just started snowballing, really, once COVID hit and COVID continued to go on. There was longer. So we learned how to build a website. We learned how to, you know, do all of the filming and editing and doing all of that on top of running some live online things too. And it kind of went from strength to strength after that.
Yeah.
We already had the idea to kind of open up the Blues Room to slowly to other instructors and not make it about Adam and Vicky, but, you know, create a platform about blues dancing. So we already had that idea, and COVID was the chance to, we got some time now, let's focus on it. And I was, I think, it, like 3 months, Vicky, of solid work.
Solid work. We did everything ourselves, built the website from scratch, designed everything, went slowly insane.
There was a moment where you could go out in Valencia, but alone, right? Not even with the person, something like that.
Hardcore. We were allowed out for a walk maybe once a day, but alone, not even with someone else, even if we lived with them.
So we went to the studio anyway and filmed. Wow, yeah.
Luckily for us, actually, our living room had a wooden floor and we had white walls. So quite a few of our online videos that look like they're filmed in very professional dance studios were actually filmed in our living room during COVID. We just moved all the furniture, got all the proper filming equipment, got all the lights, set it up in the apartment. Yeah, did it all ourselves from scratch.
Well, that's fantastic and overwhelming, I think, as a project. When you think about what goes into those types of things, you do think the website, and then you think, well, you've probably got somebody that handles the camera, and you've got somebody who knows lighting and somebody who does the sound and then edits it all for you. So that is quite an impressive undertaking to build an online school for blues, which I think, honestly, like you said, in the pandemic, we all thought things were going to be a lot shorter of a
period that we were in lockdown, or that certainly dances would start up within a year, not within, you know, here we are 3 years later and just still having that discussion about what can open up. Looking at that, you know, your platform became even more important for people who really wanted to keep pushing their dance. And you had mentioned, Adama, that you chose to invite other instructors onto the platform. So what were your thoughts? How did you choose which instructors you wanted to add to your online Blues Room?
Obviously, instructors that inspire us, that's definitely one of the things. And then we want to offer a platform where there is a lot of varieties of styles and tastes.
Different approaches.
Yeah. I mean, we've been this for quite a while. So we have a number of people who we consider friends as well, who we like very much. And like, why not? Let's bring them on board or this project. So this year, actually, I think we started in September, Vicky, with the first release. Yeah, so 2022-2023 was the year where, like, let's focus on, including and filming, including lots of new instructors. And we're going to carry on like this. And in fact, this year, we haven't had time. We can't to film a course. We'll do soon, hopefully. But yeah, I think that's probably some of the main reasons why, yeah, we want different instructors. Begin.
But also a boring part of the answer is practicalities in terms of who did we choose. It was also people who were coming to Europe, passing through, were going to be in Spain, because, as you know, transatlantic flights are very expensive. So, there are a lot of other instructors we would love to have on there, but just opportunity hasn't arisen yet, but hopefully in the future will. So it's also a little bit of logistics and practical reasons as to who is currently in the Blues Room, but hopefully there will be more in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you do have to think about that in terms of logistics, whether or not it's the boring answer, it's the real answer, which is that many of our instructors that teach blues are based in the US, and it is an expense, especially with inflation looking like it is, to fly somebody over in a time when you also were without work. So the income stream to be able to have the capital to do that is quite different than perhaps it was pre-COVID in the before times. That's very, very true. Do you all have plans to come out to the US anytime soon?
No.
No?
That's really sad. No.
No, actually. No, we haven't got any US dates in the diary at all.
And to be honest, after COVID, we've been invited to a couple of places outside Europe. And last year, Vicky and I were like, no, we're not ready to fly too far away. Next year we have a mini tour in Asia. No, nobody's got in touch with us from the US, so we don't have anybody. But there are some events we actually want to attend as well. It's just finding the time, Chelsea. For me, I'm really valuing right now spending a lot of time in my hometown or in Valencia. And, the nice thing about being in Europe is 2 hours flight to go on a weekend and you can come back home. And I'm enjoying that lifestyle in a way. I don't need to go too far away and stay away for a month too often. Yeah, so I'm really giving importance to that stay in one place. Getting old, you know?
Getting old. So there is a lot of value, I think, in the ability to stay in one place, though, the sense that you can help more people learn more in depth in the spaces that you are. You can become, really involved and intertwined in communities in a way that people who travel a lot, especially taking those month-long trips abroad, never really get the opportunity to do. So I think there is a unique opportunity in that, which is that people have long and quality relationship with you both.
I hope so.
Yeah, definitely.
It's interesting because it's something in Europe that we find, you can go away every weekend, but still be home in the week. So because we've got so many different countries that are actually relatively close to each other, it kind of allows you to have the best of both worlds. This exciting traveling life, but also have some stability and home and local community if you want to be teaching locally. And yeah, but then like you said at the beginning, we run 5 events a year as well. So that takes a lot of our time. So when we are home, that's a lot of organizing stuff is happening.
We do hope that eventually we get to see you over stateside, but we'll just have to come over to Europe and try out your events.
Yeah.
Amazing summer holiday in Adama's hometown.
Yes. I have heard about that wonderful event from locals while I was over in Clarksdale. So I think that is something we've got to put on the bucket list.
Yes. I think this year there's 7 people from the US on top of Damon and Kelsey and Kenneth and Mike Sonder. I think 7 people from the US are coming to my little hometown, which is, I'm so grateful for that. I'm so blown away.
I can say that this was Adama's dream. The year I met him, 2011, I remember him saying, like, my dream is to take blues to Italy. Because at the time, no one in Italy was dancing blues. And now look, I know he won't ever admit it, but like, I think it's an amazing thing to have achieved, to be running this pretty big festival in somewhere that, you know, as of last year, didn't ever have blues there at all. And now on top of the festival, he's also organizing regular workshops for the locals in the village because they all got so hooked that they wanted to carry on. So his mum's there and his twin sister goes to classes and it's amazing.
Well, and I think that's true, is there's something really fantastic about organically growing a community that you get to watch that blossom and then take root, and it can run even when you're not physically present. And there is a sense of pride, I think, that is involved in being able to say that you were influential in making sure those types of things happen. Well, with that, I think we're out of time, but thank you so much for being willing to spend some time on my podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to click the subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts so you always catch the latest episodes. 12 Bar Talk is hosted, recorded, and produced by me, Dr. Chelsea Adams, and supported by Salt City Blues, LLC, a blues dance event company located in Salt Lake City, Utah.